Welcome, everybody. Good evening. This is Mordechai Plotker. Welcome to ShareEnjoyment.com, the nightly share. Tonight's share is twofold. I'd like to try to begin with discussion on Parshas Bahar and discussion about Shabbat and Shemitah, and then transition into Megillas Rus for the first Pasuk. Hopefully we can get through. That would be great. So thank you very much again, and let's get started. So in Parshas Bahar, we focus on Shabbat and Shemitah, and I'd like to share with you a fascinating Or Chaim from the Arbaturim, brought down in the Torah in Siman Reish Tzadi, which is 290. There, the Medrash brings down, that's quoted as more of a halacha, but it's interesting the way it's brought down from a Medrash perspective, that Amra Torah Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Torah says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's going to happen when Klal Yisrael goes into the land of Eretz Yisrael? They're going to, this one's going to be busy with his vineyard, this one's going to be busy with his field, and what's going to be with me? Because every other day of the week has a zivug, right? You have Sunday to Monday, and Tuesday to Wednesday, right? And Thursday to Friday. And what about Shabbos? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, ah, Torah, you're going to be joined. I'm going to make a zivug with you with Shabbos. Because on that day, on Shabbos, the people will not be in their vineyards, and they will not be in their fields, but they will rather be in their homes, in their Batei Knesios and Batei Midrashos, immersing themselves in Divrei Torah. And this is a zivug for the Torah itself, Shabbos. And so Shabbos, as we all know, is a beautiful time of the week. And the Umas Olam, the nations of the world, wait for major holidays to come about so they can spend time with their family, sit down and talk and relax and recalibrate. But with the Jewish people, we have the schus of having Shabbos every single week. And that is something very beautiful and something magical. And so in that chus, we should be able to take the Shabbos and not just simply recognize, but also honor the presence of Shabbos by setting aside time for learning and setting aside time for our family so that we could reconnect with everyone and surely make a zivug between Torah and Shabbos. And the second theme that I wanted to try to touch upon is Shemitah itself. We know that Shemitah is once every 7 years. We have to let go of the land. And I think that Rav Chaim Kanievsky had brought down in one of his sichos that it takes a lot of strength for a Jewish farmer to let go of the land and relinquish it and to live the Torah life of having the sustenance come from the sixth year, transcending into the seventh and first and second, and still giving away the Maeser Rishon, Hetzer Ravai, and all the Maestros. You would think that this is something that, a man's private home is his castle, right? But according to the Torah, we see that the best way for us to hold on to something is sometimes let go. And that's a very foreign concept to the nations of the world. But for us, it comes quite naturally. The best way for us to demonstrate ownership is to let go and to let the earth rest. And in that way, we retain our kibush of Eretz Yisrael. It's really fascinating. It goes against our normal way of thinking about it. But keeping Shemitah is also fascinating because if you think about the original sin of Adam and Chava with the Eitz Hadaat, the Kol Eitz, Asher Tochal, you're able to eat from everything, but Raka Eitz Hazeh Lo Tochal, just with this particular tree you're not supposed to eat from. What was, coming from that tree? There's Machlokas, and the Gemara Baba Basra brings down that some say it was an Esrog, some say it was a grape, which is why we have grape juice on Friday night, and we make a tikkun on that particular grape from the Eitz Hadaat, and that's the reason why we have fish, because fish were not exposed to an Ayin Hara during the time of Noah. They kept their own species. And the reason why we have a minion of 10 people is because, again, that is a tikkun for the Meraglim. So every opportunity that we have to be misaking something, that's what we do. Now, when it comes to keeping the Shemitah, we're saying that from all of these Eitzim, we're not going to touch. And that, my friends, is something so powerful. It is when a person keeps Shemitah, and a person, obviously, we are in Chutz La'aretz, so this mitzvah is not applicable to us, but we surely can support those that do, and there's only another few months left in the Shemitah year by which we can, find a Jewish farmer and find a way to support him, support the family, and support the people on the yeshuv. It's a very big chutz, but keeping Shemitah is really a tikkun for the original chet of Adam Rishon. That's my chiddush for tonight. Because whereas in the origin of the world, we weren't able to keep that mandate, and now we are demonstrating that we can, this is a tikkun for the world. So that closes out Parshas Bahar. And before we close out, I just wanted to, give a bracha that we should be zochet to have a Yom Shekula Shabbos. u'menucha l'chaya olamim. It means that instead of us stressing about how we're going to make parnasa and how our week could be so stressful with this meeting or this presentation or this type of discussion, then it should really be a Yom Shekula Shabbos, u'menucha l'chaya olamim, that we should find peace and comfort in having the ability to enjoy Shabbos all week, and that will be ushered in during the time of Mashiach, that Mashiach should come about very soon, readily in our time. And so now we wanted to just transition over. I know I'm closing out on almost on 10 minutes, but I wanted to introduce Megillas Rus, and I wanted to open up with a little bit of a joke. I was talking to one of my Irish supervisors, and he asked me about this upcoming holiday that I'll be taking a day off or two. I told him it's about Megillas Rus, about someone named the Book of Ruth. So he quipped and he said, you know, I don't have that book in my house. And I didn't know what to say. So then he said to me, and that's the reason why they call me Ruthless. So when even within a joke, you can find a little bit of humor that if we look at the way we describe Ruth, right, Ruth, as being somebody who's kind, thoughtful, gentle, somebody who's thinking about Naomi and what will be with Naomi, what will be about her mother-in-law, and what will be about the future, this is someone who is clearly the opposite of Ruthless. This is somebody who is what we're going to learn about in the book of Ruth. So I just wanted to give you a perspective from an Irish perspective, and hopefully that from that we can actually appreciate a little bit. So he opens up, the Ben Yishchai opens up by saying that Elimelech made a calculation, a very serious one. He said that the only way for Klal Yisrael to hold on to Eretz Yisrael is through Limud HaTorah. However, if we look at the first pasuk, we will find that it says, Vayi b'mei shvod ha-shoftim, Vayi ra ba'aretz. Now, normally, we say by Esther, right, we say, Vayi b'mei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh ha-malech me'odu ba'akush sheva ve'asrim u'mei ha-medina, right? But that's only one Vayihi. Over here, the focus is on the fact that there are two Vayihis in one pasuk, which should draw us to question, why are there two, and what do we learn from the second Vayihi? So the first is that Vayihi, that there was a famine, in the sense that there was a decrease in Torah knowledge. And secondly, there was a famine in leadership. So when you mix the two together, you have a stronger Vayihi. Vayihi b'mei shvod ha-shoftim, that here is when a time when the people were judging the judges, which means that the judges, there was like a vacuum. Then there was no one really leading Klal Yisrael. There was no king. This is right before Shalom Melech. So there was like a vacuum. And then, Vayihi Rav Ba'aretz. So as a result of the fact that there was no leadership, or if there were leaders, like Absalom, Boaz, says Rashi, right? Boaz was clearly a leader from Malchus Beis Yehuda, but the people didn't respect the leaders. So if they're not going to respect the leaders, then how effective can these leaders really be? So Vayihi Rav Ba'aretz, the Rav Ba'aretz, is not just a physical famine, it's a spiritual famine too. And that's how Rashi learns. And so Ben Yishchai learns that as a result of learning Rashi, Elimelech made a calculation, and it was that if Klal Yisrael is not going to be Somech and not going to learn the Torah, then Torah Matei Aleh, Eretz Yisrael Matei Aleh, what's going to be where Eretz Yisrael? We're going to lose it. So he left to Arvos Moab, to the plains of Moab. And as a result of leading to the plains of Moab, he absconded the responsibility of taking care of those needy Jews within his proximity. So there are two parts to this. One, he felt he had to because he was going to lose it anyway. He was going to lose his ownership of Eretz Yisrael because of the general population. And secondly, because you know, he didn't want to sustain the needy people. So as a result of this executive decision, right, we all know that Mahlon and Kilion, his two sons, passed away. And I'd like to focus a little bit more next week on some of the Medrash Rabbos, you know, related to why they were named Mahlon and Kilion and what was this all about. And as the decision also led to the fact that they left, as the Gemara Bava Basra brings down, that they married Rus and Arpah before they converted, so they were married outside of our faith. And all of these terrible ramifications of leaving Eretz Yisrael. However, what's really interesting is that the Ben Yishchai brings down that Elimelech's decision was partially correct, whereas some people would say that is 100% incorrect. The Ben Yishchai learns that it's partially. And why did he say this? Because he said, how else would someone like Rus enter into our family? Rus is not going to go into the Beis Medrash and say, hi, would anyone like to marry me? This is not the way things are done, right? So the very fact that they went outside of their plains of Moab, outside of Eretz Yisrael, into the plains of Moab, served as a schus. And that's why David HaMelech later on said, Arov Avdecha L'tov Al Yashkuni Zedim, right? That means that let the people that speak poorly about me, Al Yashkuni Zedim, don't let their words have any footing. However, the Ben Yishchai turns the words around and he turns the letters of the first word and he says, Arov is also the letters of Ra'av, that the Ra'av, that the famine, Avdecha L'tov, it turns out for me, your servant, for good. Al Yashkuni Zedim, don't let the naysayers have any footing. And who are the naysayers? Actually, I'm not up to the daf, but I am familiar with the fact that we are about to touch upon tomorrow's daf, Ayin Zion, which focuses on the lineage of David HaMelech, who passed away on Shavuos. Shmuel HaNavi, as we know, wrote the book of Rus, and he was Nifter 2 days before Shavuos, so that's really a testament to Shmuel HaNavi. And the Gemara there discusses that when David HaMelech went out to battle, right, so even though he was a foot shorter than Shaul HaMelech, Shaul HaMelech, according to the Gemara, was about 6'6", and he was a very tall, very handsome man, very strong, but his armor miraculously was able to fit onto David HaMelech. And when David marched into the field, everyone wanted to know, like, who are you, David, to go ahead? You know, you have 7 older brothers that came from Yishai, your father, and you, who are you? So Doeg HaDomi was part of that council. And so first Shaul turned to Avyasar, the Gemara brings down, and says, Avyasar, like, who is this? And then the Gemara says, what do you mean? Why would they ask who this is? Don't they know that Yishai commanded 600,000 men? Of course they know who the family is, but they weren't asking that. They were really asking, does he come from the family of Peretz or Zarach? If he comes from Peretz, then Shaul HaMelech, you have something to worry about. But if David comes from the house of Zarach, then he'll be a prince, and there's nothing for you to be concerned with. And so Doeg HaDomi then chimes in, and as he always was a rebel rouser, he said, what are you asking about whether it's Peretz or Zarach? Why don't you first find out if he's Jewish, if he's actually allowed to be part of the Jewish family? Is he really one of us? And it says in the Pasuk, Amoni velo Moavis, that the prohibition is on the Amoni men, that we're not allowed to marry them. But velo Moavis, the prohibition is not about the women. And we all know that Ruth was the matriarch. She was the ancestress of David HaMelech. So you're questioning whether or not Ruth was able to join into our fold. And now you have a bigger question, right? And that's when Doeg HaDomi went into the Beis Medrash, and there was a person there that was known as like a Yishmol, because he was a swordsman. And he said, Doeg HaDomi, I'm going to kill you right here now if you don't listen to the ruling, which goes back to Shmuel HaNavi from the house of Ramah, right? Because Shmuel came from that particular location. And this is a halacha that goes back to Kabbalah Satorah, Torah Shabbal Peh. And by the way, that's another reason why we celebrate on Shavuos Torah Shabbal Peh and Torah Shabbiksav. It's not just the written Torah, but also the Torah Shabbal Peh, which is Amoni Velo Moavis, that David HaMelech comes from good stock. He comes from Ruth. Why? Because the Pasuk had says, Ashalot Kidmu Eschem Balechem Uvamayim, that when we were in the fields as we were exiting from Galus, from Mitzrayim, the people of Ammon could have given us something to eat. And the Torah says, you're not allowed to marry the men. Why? Because Ashalot Kidmu Eschem Balechem Uvamayim. Why is that such a problem? Why is that falling on them? The answer is, Hakaras Hatov. Hakaras Hatov is that Lot is the ancestor of Ammon and Moab. And Ammon and Moab are Lot's children, for lack of a better way of describing it. And Lot was the one who was a benefactor of Avram Avinu. And because he received all of the chasadim from Avram Avinu, and he was sustained through Avram Avinu, they had an obligation to sustain us as well. Instead, what did they do? They gave us canteens filled with hot air, and many Jewish people died. And so the fault is with the men. So what about the women? How come the women weren't responsible? Because we learned from Sarah, as the pasuk says, "Ayesar ishtacha, where is Sarah your wife?" Vayomer hinei ba'ohel, she is in the tent. Isha tsanua, sari menu, and so therefore the women were not required like the men, and that's why the women were allowed to marry the women and not to allow our daughters to marry the men from Ammon and Moab. And so we close out by one pasuk the Ben Ish Chai brings down one more pasuk, and that's when it says, "Tovli Torah Spicha Me'alfei Zahav Kesef," that the words of your mouth are better for me than all of the gold and silver. What is the gold and silver? The halacha, says the Ben Ish Chai, that Amoni V'lo Moavis. And this is what allowed David to be, you know, obviously the future king. This is what allows us to say, David Melchi Torah Kayam. This is what allows us to eagerly await the coming of Mashiach. May it come speedily in our time. This is Mordechai Plotzke wishing you the very best. A week filled with bracha, v'atzlacha, shefa, chol minei tov, only good things. And everyone should have a successful and beautiful week. All the best. Take care.